Today, the inflation rocket just got ignited. Even more rate hikes incoming. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, World's Latest Post, covering finance and property news. Well, sad to say, the likelihood of significantly higher inflation and high interest rates globally and locally are being cemented even as we speak. So the question is, are we seeing the growing pains of a new financial system as well? On top of the continued attacks on vessels around the Straits of Hormuz, which have constricted oil supplies and lifted prices, the latest news from the Middle East is that Yemen's Houthis have now taken Husn Murad, the point on the Yemeni coast where the Bab el Mandeb Strait is at its narrowest. It's about 25 kilometres across. And that completes their takeover of the Red Sea coast along the strait, actually within 24 hours of seizing Mocha, Dubab and Zaga Island. The Houthi now have total control over the Bab el Mandeb Strait. And reports are that hundreds of IRGC officers are in Yemen working with the Houthi towards shutting the strait, which Iran has long viewed as an economic nuclear option, and they're now executing on it. Houthi leadership previously discussed a transit fee or toll system modelling on Iran's approach to the Strait of Hormuz. And regional sources also say the issues were discussed during a Tehran visit earlier in the year, with Chinese vessels reportedly exempt under the proposal. And it also appears that Saudi Arabia's east-west crude oil pipeline has suffered catastrophic damage in at least 8 locations. This comes after satellite data showed a fire burning along the pipeline route southeast of Medina, with a black smoke plume about 100 kilometres long, and it's consistent with the heat anomalies seen from space. Now, this means that Saudi's exports are going to take a brutal hit, but it also likely means that farmers in several countries will most likely struggle to afford nitrogen fertiliser, and as a result, we should expect to see wheat, rice, and maize yields falling dramatically. And the higher diesel prices that can come from this will also make irrigation and harvesting, frankly, unaffordable. So as a result, Brent crude spiked at one stage up to around $109. It's currently sitting a little around $105. While European LNG futures were up to more than $80. That's the highest level since 2022. And diesel has soared to its highest price in history. And just remember, Australia, on a per capita basis, uses more diesel than anyone else. These costs will flow through into higher prices around the world. Higher prices still. Actually, the latest PPI data from the US showed that prices that companies pay to each other in the services sector were up by 4.5%, in goods without energy up 5%, in energy up 24%, and overall up 5.4% year over year. So that sounds inflationary. And Japanese markets are in free fall as oil, yields on bonds, and a rate hike all collide just a week before the Bank of Japan meets. The Nikkei has dropped more than 2.7% on its third straight day of losses and wiping out about $200 billion in market value. And bond yields are surging across the board, with the 30-year Japanese government bond above 4.05% and the 10-year reaching close to 3%. So as a result of all this, 97% of economists now expect the Bank of Japan to raise rates to 1.25% on September the 18th. Over in Germany, gasoline prices hit a fresh record, €2.33 a litre on average. And the pain at the pump is being driven by that triple whammy of higher crude prices, surging refinery margins, or crack spreads as they're called, and higher taxes and levies too. Energy inflation is back, baby. So no surprise at all that the European Central Bank lifted interest rates for the second time since the Iran war broke out by a quarter point to 2.5%, with a renewed advance in oil prices prompting investors to boost bets on yet more hikes ahead. The ECB had made its first move in June and responded again on Thursday to a war-induced energy price surge that's produced the fastest inflation in almost 3 years. The conflict in the Middle East continues to generate inflation pressures, and inflation is set to remain well above target for an extended period, the ECB said in its statement. The outlook remains highly uncertain, with risks to the upside for inflation and to the downside for economic growth. That said, the economy's surprising resilience will help facilitate additional tightening. Output increased 0.6% between April and June, following a sharp revision to Irish data, while manufacturing is expanding at the fastest pace in more than 4 years, bolstered by digital investments and public spending on infrastructure and the military. So the decision was guided by fresh projections showing inflation averaging 3% this year before slowing to 2.5% in 2027 and 2.1% in 2028. After economic growth in the Eurozone jumped to the second quarter, the full-year forecast was upgraded to 0.9%. President Christine Lagarde called the latest hike a no-brainer that was decided unanimously and is robust against all three scenarios the ECB mapped out for the region's economy. But she warned, however, that higher energy costs are set to feed through gradually to core and food price inflation. The conflict in the Middle East and recent developments in Russia's unjustified war against Ukraine have pushed the path of energy prices up further, she said. This is likely to keep headline inflation well above target into the first half of 2027, to which I reply, and probably longer than that. So traders are now fully pricing in three more rate increases by October 2027, which cements the ECB as the top hawk among the group of seven central banks. The ECB's stance contrasts with the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England so far, which have yet to follow suit over the fighting in the Middle East, but that could all change because the inflation pressures are there for all to see. Bond investors want to be compensated for the risks they're taking, and the risks are coming from policymakers. We still have some central banks who are soft on inflation, and of course, fiscal policymakers won't stop spending. Just don't mention $4 trillion in the US or $1 trillion in Australia. As Alex Joyner highlights on next, the term premium for the 10-year is rising in both Australia and the US, and US Treasury Scott Bessent expanded the bond purchases further this week. As Christopher Joy noted on next, the price action definitely raises the likelihood of a Fed hiking soon in an attempt to restore its damaged credibility. It won't want to follow on the Treasury Secretary's footsteps in this respect. Walsh will be now focusing on his legacy. The bond market is beginning to look over the fence, actually, at a considerably uglier pasture. And there is one number traders probably do not want to say out loud yet, although it is starting to sit there in the corner of the room anyway. 5% on the 10-year US, wrote SPI Asset Management managing partner Stephen Innes in his Dark Side of the Boom newsletter. The world's most important bond yield, the 10-year Treasury rate, which is widely regarded as the global benchmark for the cost of capital, surged to 4.97%. That's the highest level since 2023 and is approaching a record set back in 2007. But the big difference between now and then, other than the huge increase in the amount of debt that we have to service, is that 19 years ago, yields were still falling from a peak, somewhere around 16%, but now they're rising from lows under 1%. But of course, the global surge in bond yields isn't just a market issue. It has immediate socio and political consequences. For example, the average 30-year US mortgage rate has now just moved above 7%. And Australian bond yields shot higher to fresh multi-year highs on Friday. The three-year bond yield, which reflects where the cash rate will be on average over the next 3 years, surged to 5.05%, while the 10-year bond yield, which filters through the economy via mortgages and business loans, hit 5.4%. And yes, here in Australia, expectations of a rate hike at the September meeting is now up to 80%, with a peak cash rate now up to 4.825%. However, if inflation can just push higher as expected, this may not be enough to get things back towards their tolerance rate of inflation at around 2.5%. A Reserve Bank of Australia hike will hurt the consumer at a time when the Australian economy is looking weak, and the chances of a recession are increasing by the day, said Bell Potter's Director of Institutional Sales and Trading, Richard Cobbleson, cited in the AFR. He said the Albanese government's changes to tax concessions were exacerbating the hit to property owners. If demand falls, then companies need to cut costs and workers suffer when that happens, which means we see a big rise in unemployment, he said. It will kill inflation, but a recession now becomes a real risk in 2027. I discussed my scenarios in my post yesterday. This is, of course, likely to drive home prices lower still. Citi told clients on Friday that it expected two more rate rises this year amid what the bank's economists describe as a two-speed economy, where a deep housing correction was being offset by spending on artificial intelligence. And Citi tipped house prices would fall 10% from their peak by the first quarter of next year, a figure that doubled its previous forecast. And HSBC this week warned the correction in house prices could reach 13%. But beyond that, I noted that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says over the next 4 years, we will have to have another Bretton Woods moment.
I think as an economic historian and someone who's been in markets for 40 years, I actually think I'm starting to look like it now. It is, I think we're also at a unique moment geopolitically, and I could see in the next few years that we are going to have some kind of a grand global economic reordering. There's something on the equivalent of a new Bretton Woods, or if you want to go back, like something back to the steel agreements or the Treaty of Versailles. There's a very good chance that we are going to have that over the next 4 years, and I'd like to be a part of it. I've studied this. I think it's kind of a unique skill set.
That's the reset window, which begs the question, are we going to somehow engineer another financial crisis all over again? And after all, we've seen government debt piling up and bond markets take the strain first. Foreign buyers are pulling back from the US, yields are spiking, and Washington is stepping in with buybacks and temporary measures while the public is told it's just managing the market. Crisis pressure creates the political cover, though, for a new monetary architecture. And Bessent has been explicit. Dollar stablecoins could swell into a multi-trillion dollar market and become a massive new buyer of US treasuries. Under the Genius Act, regulated dollar stablecoins are supposed to be fully reserved in ultra-short-term treasuries. Every new digital dollar minted becomes forced demand for government paper. The dollar stays the unit of account, but now is riding potentially on internet rails instead of 1944 plumbing. So they do keep dollar dominance, but they reroute demand through a programmable 24/7 globally exported stablecoin layer. The next version they're talking about, gold in the vaults, settled on blockchain, dollar stablecoins on the rails, and a rewritten set of global rules after the current system is strained enough that people accept the swap. Actually, the famous City of London banker Lord Belgrave once warned about how central banks, the IMF and the BIS, have been planning the new monetary order. And he said recently, "I will say this carefully, as someone who has spent decades around sovereign balance sheets, central bank liquidity facilities and crisis management frameworks, what you are witnessing is rarely what it appears to be on the surface." And meantime, higher inflation and higher rates are the order of the day. Prepare accordingly, and importantly, do not overborrow at this uncertain time. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.